Hello again, and welcome to the Vox Pop, WMZ's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. As the country processes the recent shooting deaths of three people outside two Jewish community facilities in Kansas, the topic of hate crimes is in front of mind. 73-year-old Frazier Glenn Miller was the shooter. He's a known white supremacist and anti-Semite who publicly believed the Jewish race should be exterminated. Though none of the victims this weekend were Jewish, investigators are treating it as a hate crime. Joining us on today's program is Dr. Jennifer Michaels, medical director of the Breen Center, Berkshire County's largest community mental health agency. She's been in practice for over 15 years. She's here to help us shed some light on the psychology behind hate crime. What are the psychological consequences for both the perpetrators of hate crimes and for the rest of us who witness them? Well, give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also get in touch with us online, and you can also see all the ways to do that at wamc.org/voxpop. Well, Jennifer Michaels, always a great pleasure to see you. You are one of my favorite people in the whole world, and I am so happy that you're sharing this time with us. What do you know about people who commit hate crimes?
First, Alan, thank you for inviting me. What do I know about them? Well, they're not considered mentally ill. You know, we think about mental illness as schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. These are not mentally ill people. They have aggression. They have anger. They often are antisocial.
Well, doesn't that sound like a psychopath?
A psychopath, yeah.
Isn't a psychopath mentally ill?
They're not like us. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
But they're not mentally ill like someone who is suffering a delusion or severe depression.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what do you know about them?
We know that if they've been violent before, that they're more likely to be violent in the future. So that's a risk factor, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
Yeah. And there are a lot of sites where people who kind of think about hate crimes display their thoughts, you know, online, chat rooms, things like that. Most of them will never do anything. So that's comforting.
I was just thinking, I know a couple of people in the Berkshires, for example, who are known anti-Semites.
Uh-huh.
They forever are saying things that are just blatantly anti-Semitic. And yet they don't cross the line, although when you think of acting out and behavior, some of them believe, for example, that the Berkshires have too many Jews in them, you know, and are not unwilling to say that. So that's sort of an action. It's not pulling the trigger of a gun, and it's not a crime, I suppose.
Well, it's a verbal violence. I look at it that way. It hurts people, and, you know, it hurts our culture, and people don't quite know how to respond, too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so out of the ordinary when people speak that way that it can be harmful to a group. And those people get ostracized, which often then leads to kind of confirming that people are against them.
No, that's interesting.
Yeah.
No, that's really fascinating. Have you ever experienced anti-Semitism?
Yes, I have. And
can you tell us about it?
Well, I can't say the word,
but
I remember being in grade school and a man saying, or a man, he was a boy, it was maybe fifth or sixth grade, a boy saying, oh, she's a, you can fill in the blank. And then said a few other things about me. And it was just a comment about who I was. I think we were in gym. And so that is verbal violence. But was he going?
But in a case like that, does it almost always come from the parents? What do you think?
You know, we know that when people have prejudice, such severe prejudice, oftentimes they grow up in a prejudiced household and stress or issues are handled in a violent way. They don't work through and they externalize. It's not my fault. It's that person's fault or that group's fault. So they never learn how to work through their own issues, take responsibility, integrate.
Did you see 42, the Jackie Robinson movie, the movie about Jackie?
No,
well,
I need
fabulous.
To see it.
What? It's fabulous because there is a moment when he comes out on the field, and it's very early when he's first taking the field, and there's a bigot in the stand, and the bigot has a little kid next to him, and the bigot is yelling the N-word over and over again, and the kid, who, you know, is just looking at the father and then starts to say the same thing Really interesting.
And that's how it works. I mean, our parents are our teachers, and that's how we learn. So why wouldn't that little boy say that?
Yeah. Let's go to James in Ellenville. Okay, James, welcome to the show. How you doing?
How you doing, Alan? It's Jamie. You know, so I think we allow ourselves to misconstrue this if we call this a hate crime. Because it's more like a social overflow crime. You know, from something that's being spun out there by the media of this, like, protectionist, and it's mostly a white thing, you know, that's being spun that's just such an anger. And every once in a while, like, one of these guys spin out of control because, like, look how badly he even focused his hate crime. Like, it wasn't like he planned on killing Jews. He just lashed out and shot anybody that was there.
Whoa. He went to the Jewish community center.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't like he planned. He had, like, a plan on taking out the rabbi or taking out, you know, the congregation at the place. Like, it was just some place he just showed up at that time.
Dr. Michaels?
You know what? I have to disagree with that because it's been shown that most hate crimes are planned. I think this person thought that it's a Jewish community center. There are Jewish people there, and he'll injure Jewish people. But it's been shown that most hate crimes are planned, not all. You know, some may be spontaneous, but most of them are planned and kind of bubble up over time, and then there's a plan involved.
And you said something else.
No doubt that this guy was a crazy. But, like, it's like the type of anger that's going on in Nevada right now, this thing with the rancher that just decided he doesn't want to pay the federal government for land. And all these people showed up, white people, militants, and went to war with the police that tried to seize the cows as payment for what he owed the government.
James, in all honesty, I think that may be a little different. It may be social disease.
It's that same anger that's been spun out.
Well, that could be.
This guy was crazy. It really is. It's an anger that it's like got no place to go, and things like this happen.
Okay, James.
And it's something we've got to fix socially, not individually.
James, we thank you for your call. Thanks
You're welcome.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Can I say
1-800-323? No, that's wrong. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Michaels.
Well, I just want to say something about the word crazy because it's very derogatory, and it's kind of this umbrella term that doesn't really mean anything. And sometimes people say mentally ill people are quote unquote crazy, but they have delusions, they have paranoia, they have symptoms, and then this is a person who is a sociopath. He's committing antisocial acts, but, you know, to say he's crazy really doesn't say what he is.
I think that's a mistake some of us make too often.
We all do. It's an easy term to say.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about right-wing wackos or left-wing wackos, or, you know, we sort of attach easy terms to them. I've been called up short a couple of times, you know, on that. A lot of people on the phones. Let's go to Itai in Brooklyn. Okay, is it, what is your name?
Hi, my name's Itai.
Okay, I got it right. Go ahead, Itai.
Yeah, nice. I was just calling because I've been thinking about this a lot recently, and I really think that, you know, obviously somebody who's going to go out and shoot a bunch of people has serious issues, and whether that has to do with hate crime or racism or anything like that, you know, I think can be debated also because sometimes, you know, people just go out and do wacky things. But I was just going to comment and say I think we all have a responsibility to tackle, like you said, there's a lot of anti-Semitism around, a lot of racism around towards all people, and it's almost casual, you know, and I don't think that we can allow that because it's
stop right there. I want to ask you a question because my mother on the west side of Manhattan, now I'm an old guy now, but she gave out book covers to everybody, and the book cover said, if somebody says something that is racist or anti-Semitic, tell them that it's un-American. I'll never forget that.
You know, your mother was very smart because that's part of the solution is that we're all Americans.
But you got to call them. That's what Itai is saying, I think. To some degree, it's uncomfortable, but you got to say, what are you talking about? Don't you?
Exactly. People that you love and your friends and your family and all that kind of stuff, we can't just let these things slip by because I think we all have a responsibility to, I don't know, make the world that much of a better place.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, Jen. Go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, Itai, very wise what you're saying. It's about moving the social norm. You know, right now it may be socially acceptable to make some racist or anti-Semitic statements for in certain groups. We can move that by letting people know it's not okay. We shift it over time.
But what about, you know, I mean, with a guy like this, you say it to him and you intuitively know that, you know, he could kill you. So it's tougher to do.
Yeah, I don't know if I try to move him.
Yeah, you got to be careful. Well, anyway, thanks a lot, guys. I'm going to get off the phone, but I really enjoy your program, and NPR gets me through the day. So
thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. We got some calls. We got some free phones, too, so please use them. And we'll be right back with Ted and Deborah.
Support for WAMC comes from Bistro 63 at the Monkey Bar, downtown Amherst, offering casual lunches and dinners featuring steaks, seafood, cocktails, and wines using local organic products. Banquet facilities and patio dining, bistro63.com. Barry Price Architecture since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting the Rock the Ridge 50-Mile Challenge for runners, walkers, hikers on May 3rd, sponsored by I Love New York and Ulster County Alive. RockTheRidge50.org for registration. And Union Graduate College, offering an MBA in healthcare management, now online. The power of an MBA, the passion of healthcare, UnionGraduateCollege.edu.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to this very interesting show. We're here with Dr. Jennifer Michaels, who, as you know, is a regular here on WAMC, and we so appreciate her work from the Breen Center in Pittsfield, and of course on staff at the Berkshire Medical Center. David Phelps, proprietor, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. We're all connected. Yeah,
He's one of my favorite people. You know, I want to make sure we always credit him for the brains to have hired you. Okay. Okay. All five phones are ringing right now, folks. Let's go to Keene, New Hampshire, and Ted. Ted, you're on.
Good afternoon. I'm actually on 95. I've just driven up from Richmond, heading home. I heard a radio commentary or a newscast of a young black boy getting hit. And I believe down in the boroughs or somewhere in New York, when the white driver stopped to assist the 10-year-old, the boy did dart out in front of him, as the facts bear out. But five black individuals put the boot to the white driver. And a black nurse witnessed all the event from her hospital, and she came and put a stop to it. So a young man who was struck ran out in front of the vehicle. There was nothing the individual could do.
Yeah.
And he subsequently was fine, and the white individual is in a coma. And there's discussion now about how to charge these individuals that acted with rage. My point in bringing that up is, obviously, anti-Semitism, it isn't, hate crimes aren't mutually exclusive.
Oh, absolutely right.
To one race or another.
Yeah.
But also, there has to be a defect in there when rage manifests itself so rapidly in an otherwise, there were no guiding principles for five people. Maybe their parents did not like white people. But it manifested itself in such a manner that, first of all, there's never any love crimes in these events. Obviously, the word hate crime connotates a black and white issue or an anti-Semitic.
Semitic.
Beg
yeah.
your pardon. I'm having a Semitic alluding. But I just want your thoughts on, for many years, individuals of race have utilized the persecution that they've had for generations from the slave eras on. But now with the education and laws being effect, are they able to utilize that in the defense of beating a white person because of all the injustice that have been done to them over the generations.
Okay, Ted, let's stop there. There are a lot of people behind you, Ted, on waiting for your turn. So let's go to Dr. Michaels on this.
So, Ted, you're saying because there have been tensions and whites have had committed hate crimes against blacks, is there kind of a rationalization for the reverse? I think we obviously know that, you know, hate crime is not okay no matter what. And homosexual people can be victims of race crimes and hate crimes, rather. It's not limited to the color of your skin.
And that's what Bonfire of the Vanities, by the way, that was the whole theme, you know, of the book. Okay, Ted, thank you very much. Let's go to Deborah in Malta. Deborah, you're on.
Hi, thank you so much. Alan and Doctor are doctors. I grew up in as non-prejudicial, no home. Prejudice in the home in which I grew up. And just as an aside, Alan, I absolutely adore you. And thinking of anyone attacking you, I consider it a personal attack.
Well, that is so nice to hear, because believe me, you would be doing a lot of considering.
Well, I bet. And this is what I do not understand. And I am an intelligent person. I'm a thoughtful person. I don't understand. All of us have had interactions with people that have been very positive or neutral or very bad. How do you project individual relationships into an entire group? I mean, how does prejudice even, it's so illogical. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand it.
Well, isn't the nature of prejudice, difference? I mean, I've often kidded around. Arlo Guthrie has a wonderful line in one of his songs, actually written by Tom Paxton, ever since the first man came out of the slime. And I like to think two amphibians are coming out of the slime, going to different caves, looking at each other and saying, they're not me, kill them. In other words, there's always this sort of sense of difference that occurs, which is, I think, the basis of all prejudice.
That's very interesting. And but taken to its ultimate, then you would end up hating almost everybody because we are so
well.
Many
but
people.
Look at all these societies. Look at Afghanistan, the voting right now, in which it's almost entirely broken down on ethnic differences.
That's true.
So
I don't know. I agree with you completely, Alan.
Have you ever experienced it, Deborah? Any kind of prejudice against you, personal prejudice?
Yes, I have, actually. This might sound funny, but I'm from St. Louis, and when I first moved here, I still do sometimes get a lot of Midwestern prejudice.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. In fact, it was really quite difficult. I've been in New York, you know, a long time now. In fact, I'm familiar with University City, a beautiful place where I believe one of your sons is living.
Yeah, my twin brother lives there.
Yes. Oh, your twin brother.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're in the Midwest, there's so many different people with different ideas and different abilities and opinions. I always thought it was interesting that I was painted with some kind of a universal brush. Yeah, and it's funny. It's silly, but it's also quite dangerous and sad and evil.
It is. Deborah, we're going to let you go because there are so many people behind you. But thanks for the wonderful call and the wonderful affirmation. I really appreciate it.
God bless you. Okay. Thank you.
All right, let's go to Peter in Cornwall. Okay, Peter, you're on.
Alan, I just wanted to say that it's not so much hate as it is ignorance. Ignorance is a curable disease. We need to try and educate people to recognize that the person sitting next to them is really just like they are.
Peter, I was just going to say, I think you bring up an excellent point, because it's easier to have a prejudice when you don't know the other group. If you've had limited experience with, for example, Arabs, then, you know, those are the people who blow up bombs. You know, that's what you know. That's what you think. If you have a more personal, intimate relationship, a real relationship, there's less prejudice. It breaks down the bias. So it's very true.
Have you ever had a Muslim patient?
Oh, certainly.
And what's that like? You're a Jewish woman with a Muslim patient.
you know, it's never been an issue.
Really?
And I also supervise residents who are Muslim and Hindu, and it's just not been an issue.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Fascinating. And Peter, you know, this deserves to be done in the schools and in other places, because otherwise, how do you get over that ignorance?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of it has to start in the family and at the home, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
If you
sure.
have someone who is young and impressionable, you start talking about exactly how people are very much the same. We all suffer from the death of our parents and our grandparents. We have tragedies that occur that actually should be unifying. They shouldn't be something that's going to keep us apart. And a person's color or their faith should have no place in determining whether you think that person is good or bad. I'm horrified by the blind ignorance that allows us to have a world that's as messed up as this one is.
Okay, so here's an honesty question for you, Peter, very quickly, because there's so many people behind you. But because I think each of us has to look at ourselves. Have you ever really taken a close enough look at yourself to say, yes, this is a place where I have to do some work?
All of my life, if I've been standing in a group of people, with a group of people at a cocktail party or just at a gathering, and someone starts to be bigoted or racist, I will say to them, I don't need to be a part of something which is just so ignorant, and I'll walk away.
And what happens then?
Well, there are a lot of people who don't like me, but that's okay.
We like you, Peter.
We do.
At least we think we do.
Although I have a thing about people whose names are Peter. No, I'm just teasing you. That's really great, Peter. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, doctors.
Let's go to Alex in Constata. Is that right? Conestoda. Alex?
Yes.
You're on.
Hi, I just wanted to say real quick that I feel a lot of this hate crime and stuff stems from fear, and just how Peter said, it's an uneducation of the culture. And like throughout time, whether it's black or white, Jewish, any background or orientation that can be hated against has been hated against. But I feel it's also difficult to treat these perpetrators, because I'm a soon-to-be graduate of psychology and human services. And I feel that in order to acknowledge and accept that you have this very strong hatred towards a certain demographic, you need to, it's hard to reach that sort of population because they don't recognize it as a problem, because they see the other person as the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think that is the issue. They externalize it, and it's very convenient to have a scapegoat. As long as it's some other group's fault, it's not your fault.
Exactly. And it's kind of that, how you said, external default of just channeling that anger towards something that makes it not their fault, and so that they don't have to recognize it. So how do you propose beyond education? Because sometimes they won't listen to the different cultures and the different ideologies of these different people. How do you propose that we help perpetrators, or how hate crimes might be analyzed in the court system?
Well, it's a very interesting question, because, as you know, we add penalties on to crimes which are hate crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always interesting to me, because, you know, somebody in some states, if it's a hate crime, or, you know, it could be, you can get face the death penalty as a result
yes.
of that. It moves things up one. Now, one would have to, I mean, to me, the guy who did this terrible thing, he gets a gun and he goes out and he has, and this is, I think, a question for Dr. Michaels. He has no fear of the consequences. In fact, he knows he's going to get caught. Unlike all these other guys who kill themselves, he doesn't kill himself because it gives him a platform
yes.
to go on. So what I'm always fascinated with, whether it's a corrupt politician who steals or whether it's a hate crime person, don't they ever look at what the potential for what's going to happen to them is?
Well, I think there are two different kinds of people.
A stealing politician
probably has gotten away with a lot before we catch on. It's like
the tip of the iceberg. Well, but
this guy had, too. He did. He did have some consequences. But I think that this may be his big moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for some of these people who are fringe and ostracized because of who they are and how they behave, this may be his big moment. He's going to be on the front page of the paper. He's going to be special. And it just displays how distorted they are.
So how do you prevent this from happening? You know, one of the things that we've been talking about is if anybody has obvious mental illness or diagnosed mental illness, in this case, you even say, I'm not so sure it is, they can't get a gun. In some places, and that's always seen as the fix. But how would you, how do you find them in order to do that? I mean, how deeply, what kind of recess of the mind is there some of this stuff existing?
You know, I don't know all the details, but I think he was being followed by the FBI, and I don't know that he had been violent before. Do you know the whole background?
No, I don't.
But I think he was on their list and being followed, but obviously not closely enough.
Yeah. Followed has a lot of different definitions.
Yes.
Followed means he's on our radar, but not we're not we have a guy in a black suit around the corner from him.
But I think the solution ultimately is generational. We don't want the next generation to be infected with this. And how do we deal with that? You know, it's role modeling. And I think that the next generation is more liberal in accepting things like, you know, gay marriage, homosexuality.
Sure.
We have a president of color. So I think it's shifting. And sometimes as it shifts, there are people holding on to the old way, and we almost see an elevation of
without question,
violence.
We have a terrible listserv in the Berkshires, which, you know, the most animalistic things are being said about the president and about Jews and about liberals and, you know, wipe them all out and all the rest of this stuff. It's really awful, but they're there, all right. Hey, Alex, thanks for the call. We're going to get to some other people. Thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you so much. I enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to our old friend Carl from Palatine. Okay, Carl, go.
Hello, Alan. If you'll briefly put up with my post-surgical chin and mouth surgery, I'll briefly raise a friendly long-term objection. And that is, I believe, the misuse of the term anti-Semite to be restrictive of Semites throughout the Middle and Near East and North Africa. How can't an Arab be charged with an anti-Semitic comment?
Well, I mean,
by a Jew.
Well, if the definition, of course, of anti-Semite is somebody who hates Jews, for example, then it's an easy thing to understand how somebody from the Middle East can...
But that's my objection.
No, I hear it.
If the eldest son, according to the Torah and the Talmud, the Old Testament, if the eldest son of Noah was named Shem, then the word Semite derives from...
Carl, we're gonna take your comments under advisement and think about them. Thank you so much for calling. Okay, let's go to Joseph in New Windsor. Joseph, you're on.
Oh, hi, doctors. Thanks for taking my call. Very interesting conversation today. I wanted to add a little piece in there. We're talking about the ignorance of people, and maybe their parents put it in them and whatever. Maybe it's easier to have a scapegoat, the Jews or the blacks or whoever, than to maybe deal with getting to know somebody who is that. I'm Jewish, by the way, and a Christian. But I think that you got to draw the line between somebody who says stuff, like I had a guy at work once, oh, the Jews are the problem of the whole world. And I looked at him like, what? Are you insane? You know, but I realized maybe that was just his ignorance or whatever it was. But then, what about the guy that actually takes action and gets a gun and goes off to shoot people and kills people?
What about Hitler?
Yeah.
Exactly. And this is my point. And this is going to sound way out there, but as a student of the Bible, where do you draw the line between someone who's ignorant or, you know, and then evil? Where does that? And I submit that it's in the person's heart. And if they are with it and down with, kill all the Jews, kill all the whatever, then I submit that it may be evil enters their heart, let's say Hitler.
Okay, now we're about to take a break. So, Dr. Michaels, I wonder if you'd answer that question, if you have any thoughts on it.
About it being evil.
Evil versus, yeah.
Well, let me just clarify. What I mean by evil is specifically, the Bible talks about demons. Now, I know that sounds, oh, man. And, you know, you watch the news, the guy's demons got the best of him, but they're using the word figuratively.
No, but don't you think Joseph, that almost every human being has some level of not only goodness but of evilness in them?
Yeah, well, yes, of course, and that's the whole point. It's what we choose, mm-hmm. and what, if we act on certain thoughts or say no way, never. You
okay,
know?
Joseph, I think it has to do with hurting mankind. You know, I think it. You know, we can, good and evil. If we think about it, is it good for humankind or is it harmful? And hate crimes and prejudice does not further humankind.
Joseph, we got to take a break. Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it very
Thank
much.
You.
Okay, Bye. We'll take a break. That leaves one free phone, 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC goes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting Boeing Boeing by Mark Camaletti, weekends April 18th through May 4th in the Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers, nature.org/Adirondacks. St. Joseph's School, Uptown Kingston, an Academy of Arts and Sciences offering pre-K, elementary, and middle school placements for fall 2014. Daily tours of the historic Uptown campus, joyful learning guided by faith, stjosephschoolkingston.com. And Shedman Custom Woodworks, building garden and storage sheds, gazebos, and outdoor furniture for over 25 years. New Lebanon in Brunswick, New York, shedman.com for inventory.
Well, Dr. Michaels, I want to compliment you because, you know, every phone has been ringing today, yesterday. Boy, this program is getting we should get some more phones or something. I don't know. But okay, let's go to Howard in New Paltz. Okay, Howard, you're on.
Oh, hi, Dr. Shartak. How are you?
I'm good.
And I'm trying to figure out, if that's not mental illness, then what is a person like that's not mentally ill?
No, okay, so it's a definitional issue, Howard. Dr. Michaels basically said, this is not in our, PDF book or whatever.
That's right. It's our diagnostic and statistical manual. And it's a good question because it feels like it's so ill to be so prejudiced. And yet, symptoms of mental illness are things like having a severe depression or having a delusion. Now, you could say being so prejudiced is a delusion, but it doesn't really fit the criteria.
If you say this, that somebody is sending isotopes through the wall, that's mental mm-hmm. illness.
Yes.
But if you say, all the Jews are bad, and they're doing this terrible thing to the society, or all the blacks are bad, isn't this a form of mental illness?
It could veer into delusion. Most of these people doing these hate crimes and most of the prejudiced people are not mentally ill. They're more sociopathic. They're angry, probably fearful. They're ignorant of this other group, and it's not considered a mental illness like a depression or a panic
attack. You're talking about from out of a book, in other words.
Out of a book.
In other words, in psychiatry, we don't really have a treatment for this. I mean, we don't treat people who come in and say, I'm prejudiced against black people. Can you help me?
Mm-hmm. You know, could I say one more thing? I have two close friends. They would do anything for me. They would come out for me at 3 o'clock in the morning if I was stuck on the road. And they're both sort of anti-Semites. But I don't disconnect from them because of that. And as a matter of fact, one of them was so bad that he actually met a Lubavitch guy in the street who put tefillin on him.
Are you Jewish, Howard?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But I mean, this, of all people to pick on, and he's not even Jewish. And this guy came up to him and did this to him. And I said, this is going to change this guy's life. And it is, little by little, is changing him. So I think by wearing them down, by being with them, you know, as much as you can, so there's sort of a synergistic kind of...
So you're not like the guy who walks away in the cocktail party. because of the anti-Semitic remark. Yeah. Hey, Howard, Howard, we're going to let you go. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
All right. Let's go to James in Hudson. Okay. James in Hudson, go.
Yes, this is me. I'm going to try to be brief.
Good.
First of all, I'm from an Irish background, and I'm gay, so I've been called a lot of names in my time. And I think that, you know, that one thing I was going to say, there was a lot of, like, in the big student of the 20s and 30s and the teens in literature, and there was a lot of what I would call casual anti-Semitism going around there. But in James Joyce, when he wrote Ulysses, he made the hero, Leopold Bloom, a Hungarian Jew. So he was very, very much against that, and it's very funny, and there's a joke in the first chapter where he has one of the priests be, like, really horribly anti-Semitic. And it's, you know, the guy's an idiot. So I would also say this guy that not only did this guy that, you know, killed these people, unfortunately, you know, kill the wrong people, but he was, you know, he was also an idiot. And the only other thing I'm going to say is that I think anyone that kills people is insane.
Well, you know, I've always thought about that. I thought that too, James, but there are many people who disagree with me. I mean, I've always thought if you pull a gun on somebody and pull a trigger, you got to be insane. But you know.
I have a temper. I get mad at people, but I've never wanted to kill anybody ever.
Yeah, you know? but if a mafioso takes, you know, $100,000 and puts a gun next to somebody's head for pay, is that insanity?
That's a different kind of thing. I'm not that person.
Anybody who pulls a trigger is insane. Dr. Michaels?
Yeah, I think many people who commit murder try to get off with the insanity plea, but they knew what they were doing. They chose to do
it.
That's
our definition.
And
right?
Yeah. And so and it wasn't as though they heard a voice telling them to do it. And it's hard for us to understand that some people are really bad people and do bad things, or they like to cause other people pain. Fortunately, this is a small minority of the human race, but there are those people.
Well, I'm just going to encourage everyone to read Ulysses. Because
I like that.
James Joyce was not an anti-Semite, even though he was surrounded by them.
Yeah.
So,
hey, James, good luck, and thanks for calling. We love Hudson. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Okay, cheers. Okay, bye.
Let's go to Joshua in Albany. Okay, Joshua.
Hello, how are you? I'm going to try and give you details and be very brief. In 2003, I was the victim of a hate crime. I was gay-bashed outside of a bar in Albany. A guy came out of nowhere, smashed my face, and smashed me in the face with a bottle. As it turns out, he had approached a cop walking the beat asking where the FAGs hang out. He broke every bone on the left side of my face. I've had 5 surgeries so far, more to come. And the police in Albany responded instantly, were great. The district attorney's office, to try and get this guy charged with a hate crime, it was like pulling teeth.
How long ago was it?
This was actually 2003, and it never made any news. The only news was when this the guy who hit me killed himself. They wrote a big story in the Times Union about how sad it was that he was mentally ill, and, you know, he chose to kill himself rather than face jail time. And it's just, I mean, to me, the hate crime itself was awful. The lack of response from the gay community in Albany, from, you know, any sort of news organization trying to get this publicized, from the district attorney's office. It was amazing how little was done.
Joshua, thank you for the call, and I'm so sorry for what you've gone through. Appreciate it.
Hey, I'm moving on. I'm still here.
You gotta move on. Thank you so much, Joshua. Did you have anything to add to that?
Just, Joshua, I'm thinking about you. You sound like a resilient person, but when someone's been through that, I think about therapy, about post-traumatic stress disorder, not isolating, really, working through what you survived.
Okay, we'll go to Andrew in Ashfield, Massachusetts. Okay, Andrew, you're on.
Hi there.
Hey.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. I came into the middle of the show, and I just wanted to say that I think we call prejudice and hate a pathology at a really big risk. Because
You mean a psychiatric pathology? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, I
so you agree with Dr. Michaels?
Well, I hear a lot of people saying that they don't, they're not prejudiced. I hear people saying that there's something very, very wrong with people who are prejudiced. There's something wrong with everyone of us at some point.
Well, isn't it a matter of degree, Andrew?
Yes, of course. I'm all for, you know, hate crime legislation. I mean, it's a particularly bad thing to do. And when you hear someone like the last guy, you think, you know, this is these punishments are important. But I think our tendency as humans to distinguish between us and them is extremely natural.
Absolutely.
And they have been there. It's an instinct that was a survival instinct for eons, and it was crucial to survival.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we change ourselves that quickly. And I think we've done an incredible job of changing ourselves in this country through legislation, through TV shows, through movies, through legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it's done. The message gets out that this is wrong. We think this is wrong. We lead with these things.
So interesting.
I think we have to understand that these awful, hateful instincts exist in each one of us, and they come out when we're in crisis and when we're scared.
Okay.
I think we ignore that fact at our own peril.
Well, you put it together very well. We've said much of the same things during the show. But,
okay, good.
But I so appreciate your calling, Andrew. Thanks again. Yeah.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. But I want to make sure that you all know that there are five phones ringing, and that'll be important. Okay, so let's go to Linda. All right, Linda, you're on.
Hi. I don't think anyone has mentioned the degree to which this kind of fear and ignorance is exploited by politicians and business people for their own purposes.
Okay, give us some examples.
Okay, the only good Indian is a dead Indian to justify westward expansion.
Sure.
Hatred of blacks was necessary to sustain the plantation system. Black and poor southern whites were deliberately set against each other in order to prevent them from recognizing their community of interest. The huge Know-Nothing Party in the middle of the 1800s was based upon hatred for Irish Americans. The Northern Ku Klux Klan was as much against Catholics and Jews as against Northern blacks. And fear of Muslims has justified the excesses of the Patriot Act and the War on Terror. And politicians are always exploiting people's fear and ignorance and hatred of homosexuals and welfare recipients and immigrants. It is a tool constantly in use by the political community and even the business community. I have heard that in big industrial laundries, for example, they'll put all the black ladies in one area and tell them to be very suspicious of the sneaky Vietnamese, and then take them and tell them to be suspicious of the lazy other people, and, you know, just keep people
separated. Linda, only because there are so many people behind you, I want to give Dr. Michaels a chance to respond to this.
Okay.
You know, Linda, I think you're right, but at the same time, we are a nation of immigrants, and that's the best way to counter this, is that, you know, we're a melting pot, and it's very hard to sustain what you're talking about when we've become kind of mutts in our society.
Without question.
Yeah.
So that our children are intermarrying, all of this is happening, so the next generation... it fails with the next generation. You know, Linda,
yep.
I often think of, in terms of what you're saying, the politicians are totally irresponsible sometimes. But, you know, they are quick to pick up on what resides in the hearts of man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that might not be a great comfort to recent immigrants or to people on welfare or to homosexuals at this point in time.
Nobody's arguing with you.
Yeah.
You know, we understand what you're saying. Thank you, Linda.
Okay,
appreciate
bye.
Bye. Let's go to Juliana in Rhinebeck. Okay, Juliana, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling because this is a very personal subject for me.
Okay.
I grew up in a bigoted and very racist, homophobic, you name it, family. My parents didn't believe in the Holocaust. I think that at some point when I met, I grew up very Catholic, but I'm not criticizing all Catholics by any means. But I think when I met my first non-Catholics and realized that they were not going to go to hell, that they were just people, that started to open the door. And then I went away to college and I met my first non-Americans, non-white friend from India, and I started to question things that I had been taught. And I'm not sure why it is that I was able to do this, to let go of what I grew up with. But I have found that now that I'm a parent, that it's extremely important to talk to your kids about the stuff that is happening, even if it is a painful conversation, to talk about Trayvon Martin, for instance.
I have a question. How do you deal with your parents now?
I was going to ask the same question.
I mean, how do you manage that? Is there any room to shift their views?
It's so difficult because I think, like so many people that are that way, they never leave it alone.
They can't get over it.
No, they can't get over it. And, in fact, the first time that I was married to somebody from India who was not white, Christian, or tall. And I was disowned for that.
Really?
And that ended in a divorce, and many years later I met the person I'm married to now, and he is white, and his name is Christian, but he's an atheist. And it took them several years to realize that, you know, that he wasn't actually the darling, and I scored major brownie points for marrying him. But I talk to my kids about this. I want them to know the good and the bad that's happening. I want them to grow up with a sense of fair play and compassion.
Juliana, I love your telephone call. I want to get one more in,
sure.
But I thank you so much. It's a great call. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Okay. And let's go to Malcolm in Sunderland, Massachusetts. Okay, Malcolm, you got just a second or two. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much for your time. Both of you, I very much appreciate the show today. I was just going to make a quick comment. Doctor had commented about the fact that most racism, if someone comes to, say, a psychologist or psychiatrist or, you know, whatever, therapist with racist tendencies, it's not something that's thought of as, you know, that's not even a situation people really think of because it's not something that they classically treat. And I was wondering that, you know, maybe in a society where that was a much more open and acceptable thing, where if someone were coming and saying, well, look, I realize I have these problems and I'm looking for some kind of therapy and treatment to get over it, that if maybe the behavioral, I think it's called dialectic or something like that, therapy or something that really would to accept that and focus
okay,
on it.
Okay, Malcolm, I get the drift. Let's ask Dr. Michaels to respond.
Sure. Malcolm, you know, maybe I misspoke. We do treat people who have, as part of their spectrum, prejudice ideas. And part of the therapy may be examining and kind of working through them and understanding what's beneath it. So it's not as though we ignore it. But
great.
That's more of what we do. But it's unusual to have a person come to us and say, I'm prejudiced. Can you help me? I think I have a problem. It often surfaces in therapy, and then we work through it as we work through their whole personality structure.
Understandable.
Malcolm, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Alan. Yeah. Thank you, doctor.
Okay, let's take a chance on John. John, it has to be really fair. Go fast. Go ahead.
Hi, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to ask you about the fairness of hate crime law. If a white man shoots another white man to death, they'll get a certain amount of years, maybe 20 to life.
John, believe me, we got it. We understand the concept of the question. Jennifer?
I think you're the expert.
Well, the answer is it's very problematic. And I think your question shows that. But we think it's such a serious thing in this society that we say, okay, we got to do something to stop it. So we're going to add an added penalty on if we find it. But you mean if you shoot my kid, it's okay because you weren't prejudiced? But if you're prejudiced or you're racist, they get a life sentence or a death penalty even? I think it's a very interesting subject you bring up, John. And I think we ought to talk about it some more on the show. Thank you so much for calling. We're out of time. Okay, we are out of time. Thank you, everybody. And thank you to Robert and Sandy who are left on the line. I do apologize. I'd like to get everybody in. Also like to thank, as always, the wonderful Dr. Jennifer Michaels for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Binghamton University to help students convert intellectual studies to real-world applications, binghamton.edu. And Troy Chromatic Concerts, presenting violinist Hilary Hahn and piano soloist and composer Corey Smythe, this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, troychromaticconcerts.org. And the Double H Ranch, Lake Luzerne, New York, providing outdoor and Adirondack adventures for children with a chronic and life-threatening illnesses, a serious fun camp, doublehranch.org. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.